Today we're joined by Richard Moreland from RTFQ, who's going to give us some wonderful insight into funding and grants. We know that there's been funding and grants available last year, but there's been new initiatives by the government. And of course, people are finding their situations changeable. You know, some people might have a great idea that they want to bring to fruition, and it's how can they do that? Can they get some assistance with funding and grants? Some people might want to add services to their businesses. And some people might be finding themselves in the unfortunate situation where they might be losing their job soon. And it's like, you know, we've got a great idea, but can we bring it to fruition? How do we do that? And one of the people you can speak with is Richard Moreland from a company called RTFQ, because he deals with grant and funding. Richard, thanks for joining us. Hello.
Hi. Great to be here. Hi.
Hi, Richard.
So, Richard, tell us a little bit more about what you do, how you do it. How did RTFQ come about? Is it just yourself in the business? Enlighten us, please.
Okay, well, way back when, if anybody remembers the 90s, and if you do, you weren't there. This thing called PFI came up, the Private Finance Initiative, where Tony Blair's government started building lots and lots of hospitals and schools and prisons and other services, really, and needed to get the funding for it. So the idea was that the private sector would bid for the right to build and operate those facilities.
Okay.
And to make it fair, there'd be competitive tendering. In other words, you compete, you'd write a bunch of, answer a bunch of exam questions, and you compete to win. And great. So everybody goes off at it, and actually writing the answers to questions about something that you know deeply, innately, is quite difficult. You know, trying to explain, as I'm struggling to do now, exactly what you do to somebody else when it's absolutely in your bloodstream can be difficult. And so the private sector, we worked a lot of construction companies at the time, looked for people who could help them write these responses and edit them. Mm-hmm. Now, back in the old days, you used to send tons and tons of responses, paper, 30, 40 page answers to each individual question. Things have become more refined now as competitive tendering has evolved. And we started a company reasonably recently. I was a freelance for a long time, a couple of years ago, RTFQ, ATFQ. Polite version is read the full question, answer the full question.
Oh, wow, right, okay.
So our idea is that we sit alongside companies who are bidding, and we advise them from the point of looking for the opportunities and searching for them to engaging with the client, getting to understand exactly what their needs are, all the way down to how do you find these invitation documents and these tenders? What kind of questions are they going to ask you? How do you answer them? How do you give them your life story about your business in 400 words, which is always a challenge.
Yes, definitely.
How do you understand what the competition is? How do you price the thing? How do you get it in on time? And with our lovely digital age, all the paper's gone, and generally now it's digital uploads of lovely PDF documents and various other design things. Mm. So in terms of the business itself, the core resource is myself and Marjorie McPherson, who's been working in this area for about 12 years now. People who know the Chamber will know Marjorie. She pops up in all sorts of events around there, and she's brilliant at organizing people to bid, because there's one thing writing the stuff and editing it. I always think I've got the easy job, but actually organizing your resources to get the bid in on time when everybody's got the day job to do
is
quite a challenge. Marjorie's good at being firm but fair on getting those resources together, and also helping people express graphically some of the things that need to be done, like organization charts, flow diagrams, processes that, again, you do in your own business unknowingly, unthinkingly, but actually you've got to articulate that to somebody else. Yes. And as you'll know, Wayne, a picture is worth 1,000 words.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, it communicates instantly. So, I can understand telling the story visually is going to be very important. Yeah, definitely. So, fascinating insight and background. So, rolling into the here and now, funding, dealing with the immediate impact. I mean, it's a point that you mentioned to us that you'd like to cover. And we know that there's grants and funding out there. So if you're running a business, what do you do, Richard?
Well, I think now it's becoming a bit clear, and is pretty well publicized, that there is some immediate hardship funding out there. And there's been a series of, we're aware of the furlough system for employees, but also one-off grants for businesses that have had to close because of the social distancing requirements and the different levels of that have come in. I won't go into it in massive detail here, but suffice to say, if you go onto uk.gov and type in, you know, grant funding, business funding for COVID interruption or something like that, it will pop up pretty much immediately. Mm. There's one-off grants of up to about £9,000, I think, for businesses that have closed down due to lockdown restrictions. Doesn't sound like much, does it? I don't know what you do with £9,000, but it might get you through the next few weeks, if you like, if you're a small business. Mm. Obviously, there's also the business loans. It's not grant funding. It's not money falling from the sky. But the business, British Business Bank, which effectively is a network of loads of other banks that we'll be familiar with from what used to be the high street, and others outside there as well, are offering loans at preferential rates. First year for nothing and no repayment, but subsequent 6 years, 2.5%. I think many, many people are familiar with that. Mm. Probably jumped on board with it. The key thing there is, if you went small, if you like, at the beginning, because who knew it was going to carry on?
Yeah.
COVID was going to carry on for so long. It might be worth having a look at again to see whether you could go back for a second bite at that
Loan.
The constraint is that you can't borrow more than 25% of declared turnover in financial 2019, something like that. Again, check on the website. This isn't gospel. But one thing I'd say about that is it's still 2.5%. Interest rates are low anyway. So when we say preferential interest rate, yeah, it's a bit better than you probably get from the high street, but not that much better. And, you know, if you borrow the full 50,000, that's £1,250 a year to find an interest there or thereabouts over subsequent years. And that's before you've paid the capital back.
Yes.
We don't want to saddle our kids with student loans for similar reasons. You've got to be pretty confident about your recovery.
Yeah.
If you're going to go large on those kind of things.
And I suppose it's very difficult, isn't it, for people to actually in business to consider a bounce back, a profitable bounce back. I mean, depending on what sector you're in, it could actually be, you know, if you're having to redraft the business plan, it could be year two, three. You might have to consider year five before, towards the end of paying your loan back, that before you have got comfortably back to where you feel that the business should be.
Yeah. And I think we've had a bit of time, all of us, to reconsider what our business models are.
Yeah, yeah.
We're all looking in the crystal ball and trying to think, well, how is this changing things? We're not going back to a normal.
No.
This is it now. We've been propelled 5 years forward into the future by COVID and, I should say, Brexit as well. Mm. So on that basis, it pays well to think about what the business is going to be and what your market's going to be for what you do before indebting the business, you know, diving in and borrowing the money against the old model, because I can't think of many businesses that haven't changed, and some, you know, quite profoundly, I think.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think this is a time to reflect. It's a time to kind of decide, are you can you be more competitive? You know, are there different areas of the market you can facilitate? Are you really hitting your target market? You know, looking at your business model, your marketing plan, are you taking advantage of marketing streams well enough? I think, you know, you've got to really consider these things. You've got to shake the tree, as we would say in our industry. For those that don't know, I do brand marketing, web and all that sort of stuff. So I do this day in, day out, but it's really surprising that some businesses have services that they don't promote that clearly either to the potential target market. And I've mentioned this 101 times with people that I speak with, is that generally speaking, you know, if you've got only one brochure in your business, for instance, I know brochures and print, and, you know, a lot of people don't go down that route anymore, but it's similarly with web pages. You know, if you've got one web page that talks about your services, you actually should need to review your services, and you need a web page and a brochure, an independent brochure, a four-page brochure, two-page, whatever it might well be, that talks specifically to the target market for a specific service. Because having an overarching brochure is not the done thing anymore, because people are looking for different points when you're reviewing, when you're communicating your services. So it's really important that you break your business down and understand your target market, who may differ from service to service. So there's lots of things to consider, really. Like you say, if you're going to go for that investment, you've got to make sure that you're doing the right thing and you're giving it your best shot. You really have.
Mm. Yeah. Note to self to go back to the website and have a look at it again now. Thank you for that.
I do a free consultation.
There's another consideration. I mean, I think for some people, it might be time to say, actually, I'm not sure what the future is of the business, you know, post-COVID, which sounds awful, but actually it's quite uplifting because it gives you a chance to run off to the circus, perhaps. Yes. You stop at the right point, you can say, well, maybe it's time to go on my own. Maybe it's time to stop this, particularly if, unfortunately, you know, you've been laid off or work isn't there for you. And there is, if you remember the 80s now, if I'm going back a ways.
I do remember the 80s.
The Enterprise Allowance Scheme. Remember that one?
Yes.
Well, guess what? The government have innovatively created what they're calling the new Enterprise Allowance Scheme. Mm-hmm. Great name. Which works in pretty much the same way. If you find yourself in a position where you're on universal credit, or job seekers allowance, there is some funding in there for the first 26 weeks if you want to start up. Mm. They'll pay you, it's up to about £1,200 over 26 weeks, I think, and a bit of other support as well. If you've got a business idea that you've always thought, well, actually, we need to get out of this and maybe use my entrepreneurial skills to get into that. Mm-hmm. There's options there as well. So it is a desperate time for some, but it's also an opportunity for a fresh start for many others.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think as well, you know, whilst we're over-reliant, I think, on websites and digital technologies, I still believe in old-fashioned techniques, so that if you've got a worthwhile idea, and we would advise this anyway, is you don't necessarily need anything to begin to sell to a target market, unless it's products, of course. But if you're doing a service, if you know of people or businesses that would be interested, just pick the phone up and talk to the relevant people. I think before you kind of consider, oh, you need an all singing, all dancing website, and you need several grand to do this online thing, and you need online marketing, and your Facebook page is going to do this and that. Fundamentally, if your business is going to work, you should be able to pick the phone up, talk with a few people, and get some business. And and I think that will speak volumes of yourself personally as well, because I think these days there's an over-reliance on online marketing, where people work within almost like faceless companies. You know, the brand is you. If you know, you're very much part of the company's success, and therefore if you steer it from the front and you pick the phone up and you say, I've got this great idea for you, or I'm doing this service which is applicable to yourself, and I'm doing it here and there, and you know benefits and you know features of that service, then that's all you really need to gain some work. And it can all start from there. You know, if you're in that point of being made redundant, just pick the phone up, just get a computer and pick the phone up. That's all you need to be doing.
And it is a bit, I'm not great with the phone. And it is a bit fearsome when you're almost cold calling into somebody and doing that.
Do your warm contacts first, definitely. It'll give you some momentum. It will give you some kudos, because you can say, oh, I'm working with, you know, Bob down the road who runs, you know, the garage, or, you know, the accountancy practice, or whatever it might well be. You've got to exhaust your contacts, definitely.
Sure.
But we've all got contacts, definitely. Yeah.
Well, and the soft into this is exactly what we've all been doing for the past 9 months, really. I know you have, Wayne, is using the online networks, the Shropshire Chamber. We're members of a couple of other networking groups, MSD UK, which is for ethnic minority businesses, where, you know, people can come together, but you can kind of sit back and find your time to jump in and have your say and build up your confidence in doing that, you know, over time. So when you're ready, it's time to share and widen your circle. And we're all very used to doing it now, which is great. So it's not, it's probably more natural now for us to click on a button and do this kind of thing than it is to pick up a phone or go around, if you can, and see somebody. So there's positives there. That networking always struck me as a, you know, oh, I don't do that, I'm not a salesperson, it's a bit fearsome. But I think it's a pretty relaxed world out there now.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that's one of the first things that I did when I set up, having had some experience when I was working for an agency, is to join networking groups, because it, as you say, it builds your confidence, it helps you focus on your business, helps you understand where, what your strengths, weaknesses are, and what opportunities are out there, etc. And what I would say as well, from my own personal experience, is when I first worked in an agency, I didn't even want to speak with a client. I was so shy. I just wanted to work behind the scenes, creating the work that they absolutely loved and was spurring the company on, gaining us clients left, right, and center. I mean, we you know, we were doing some really great work. But I was, you know, I used to be invited to a client lunch meeting, and I used to just kind of like, I'll let all the others do the talking, and like, I'll be eating my baguette, and I'll be like,
let other people do the talking,
and then I'll be like, oh, I'm eating my baguette, I'm making too much mess. I'll be like so self-conscious about, oh, I'm making too much mess. I might say the wrong thing, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, it's people do business with people and be yourself, you know.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I set up by myself in the early, well, in 2000, that I started to grow my confidence through networking. You know, essentially, that's what it was. And it's the same for you, isn't it, Darren, really? You know, you're great at what you do, and networking has become part and parcel of gaining new contacts.
Yeah, I have got better at it. I must admit, though, as Richard said, it sounds quite ridiculous, but actually picking a phone up is kind of like, oh my God, I'm going to speak to a real person. And as you say, especially nowadays when it's like, oh, an email's so much easier. But yeah, once you actually spoke to somebody, then they've heard your voice. They're going to like you, yes. You know, so yeah, it is getting over that bit of a hurdle, but yeah, I think you're quite right to actually to remember that we are human beings, and that human beings like other human beings and interact with other human beings. It's not a computer talking to a computer, that yeah, you can, you know, get business that way. I mean, and another sort of thought, as Richard was saying about, yeah, to take this opportunity, you know, sometimes people do go into new businesses because of something happens, and obviously this COVID-19 is a massive something. But and another sort of thought is sort of social enterprises that, you know, somebody might think to set up something, you know, on that sort of side of things, because I don't know whether there's sort of, you know, funding for that available, Richard, or...
There is. Right. Well, here's the thing. The public sector can't do everything for us. It certainly can't do everything for us when we're so massively in debt, and will be for the next however many years as a nation. So so they're definitely reaching out to the social enterprise sector, so charities and small community associations, and something called community interest companies, which we could talk about in a bit if you want, to say, well, these smaller... locally focused projects or need focused projects, central government can't really understand and get down to the nitty gritty of those. It's much better done at a local level.
Yeah.
And so through local council funding or through lottery funding or a myriad of charitable trusts that are around there, things are really happening on the ground right now. And COVID's really spurred this on, that are making sure that people with disabilities or in situations of deprivation, or just young people who are missing out on their sports, etc. All sorts of things are happening very, very quietly behind the scenes. And I know Shropshire's got a fantastic social enterprise sector that does thousands of things. We met quite a few people there. So the funding is there if you know where to look.
Right.
And getting yourself into a situation where you can go and follow a funding dream, if you like. A lot of people have always wanted to do something, give something back to the community, but not sure where to start. And my starting point is, I would suggest, there's a website called Funding Central.
Okay.
Which is pretty easy to remember. Just put a search on Funding Central. And not only does it give you the lay of the land in sort of what's out there, and you can do targeted searches depending on what your interests are, but it'll also talk you through some, you know, strategies for getting yourself set up, and really how to go about the funding process, which, again, becomes a writing competition, and it's very competitive. But it's not as onerous as competitive tendering for a commercial contract. So that's a great place to start. The other place to think about is this idea of a community interest company. You can set it up very, very simply. It costs you £35. And it's a limited company, but it's got a not-for-profit motivation behind it. It's not a charity.
Yes.
And you can pay yourself from it, but you'll have a statement of intent about what you're going to do within that community interest company, and that then opens the door for you to go and bid for all these funding pots that are about. So, you know, community facilities, sports and recreation, all sorts of things.
Mm. And is that a difficult process to go through? You know, is it a real onerous sort of vast forms? You know, would it sort of put somebody off right from the start, or would you sort of say they need help, or is it something that, you know, anybody can do?
Anybody can do. I don't know. It depends. If you're used to, you know, writing,
yes,
and responding. For example, if you've written sales propositions or sales documents before, I think as long as you've got the need of the funder in mind, I think you could definitely have a go at it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it's all be useful, and there isn't rafts of paperwork to do. You need to get for a community interest company, for example, the basics. Who are you? The accounts of the thing to make sure that you're, you know, bona fide, if you like. But beyond that, there'll probably be half a dozen or so directed questions that require you to write 300 or 400 words.
Mm-hmm.
What's your idea? How much do you want? What are you going to buy with it? Or what are you funding?
Yeah.
What's the evidence that this is going to have a positive outcome?
Mm-hmm.
Where have you done it before, if you've done it before? And a bit of a timeline, perhaps, on, you know, what's the stages of your project if you're building a new scout house or something like that.
Yeah.
How's it going to work? Have you thought it through, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not massive. The pressure, I think, with funding can sometimes come with the turnaround time. Funding, from the release of the funding documentation through to when you need to submit, can be quite short.
Oh, right.
3, 4, 5 weeks, perhaps.
Oh, right.
Sounds like a long time, but actually, by the time you've got all your bits of evidence together and thought it through, the time can soon disappear. We've been involved in businesses during COVID that have received funding for all sorts of bits and pieces. Funding for, can you imagine, ex-offenders have been released into the community now.
Mm.
Well, you're walking out into a world where, let's say, if you've done a couple of years inside, you'll be digitally disadvantaged almost immediately.
Yes.
Because you imagine the progress we've had in the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
All the services that you'd rely on when you were coming out, you know, accommodation services, you might need help with drug and substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You probably need benefits. Well, DWP offices could have been closed over the past 9 months.
Mm.
Accommodation centres around, there's a lot of people finding themselves in a homeless situation because of that. So social enterprises have stepped in to help in that there to make sure that there's somebody at the gate to meet them, make sure they get into accommodation. Now, the probation service is supposed to do that anyway and does do a pretty good job of that. But COVID's put that extra pressure there that social enterprise needs to come up and help with. And that's happening in so many different realms as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, those are things that you just don't consider, you know, but there are parts of society that need assistance that you just would not think of, you know. It's just how the pandemic can affect so many different things that, again, you just don't, you wouldn't even concern your mind. But I mean, it must be so traumatic to think that you know you're trying to taste freedom, but you're going straight back into residential lockdown. It's crazy.
And in truth, you know, some of that number of people who come out will think, well, actually the best place for me is maybe to go back into custody. Because it's warm, I'm getting 3 meals a day, and guess what, the reoffending rate will inevitably, there's a risk anyway that it'll go up because people want to get back in. You know, in other realms as well, think about older age groups that meet in a community centre that can't do that right now. How do they keep together? So funding for not just some tablets or devices so they can do this, what we're doing now with the Zoom, but also that they know how to use those devices, might be the first time.
Yes.
They've had a digital device in their hands.
So how does somebody sort of find out about, you know, a community interest company? What, you know, do they just put it on Google and
I'm afraid the answer to all of these questions is go look on Google.
Okay, fair enough.
Gov.uk are really good, actually. They do, it's a very straightforward setup.
Right.
What I'd say is just have a think, if you're doing it with friends or colleagues or family, have a think about exactly what the aims of your community interest company would be.
Yep.
Sketch it out on a piece of A4, because you'll need to write that foundation statement, if you like, as part of your application.
Mm-hmm.
But the process is reasonably straightforward, I think, to set up a CIC.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that could be a real, you know, good thought for you know, a lot of people out there, in these times.
Decide what the need is. Mm-hmm. Make sure that the need is genuine, and if, you know, there's plenty of need out there, and then go for it. I'd say, particularly if you've got more time on your hands now than you have before.
Well, exactly. I mean, after all, there are, I mean, if there are any positives to come out of this situation, I do think that community, you know, projects and a feeling of community really has risen. You know, the people are far more likely to want to help on earth. As you say, they've got, you know, some people have got more time on their hands. Yeah, to really think about what they would like to do, to, as well as the idea of running you know, a different business, it actually, you know, do their hearts good, you know, do your soul good to be, you know, helping people, you know, not necessarily just, oh, where's my business, how much money can I make, you know, to look after myself, but to be able to, you know, help other people can, you know, as I say, good for your soul.
It's interesting. It's interesting as well, Darren. You know, when you speak with some business owners, I mean, me personally, they do so much work on the side from a charity perspective because they feel that they want to give back anyway. And, you know, and maybe some of those business owners are actually thinking, well, rather than just giving back, maybe I could actually innovate a little bit more.
Yeah.
And work closely or develop something. And I think the time has allowed us all to have a think about what we're doing and can we do things better and get involved in other ways. It's really, really interesting. How, and one other thing as well is we were talking with Tess from the Sea Change Trust, and she mentioned post-traumatic stress disorder. So it's not just what's happening now, it's when we come out the other side of it. I would imagine from a social enterprise perspective or a CIC or whatever it might be, that we actually... we're going to need a lot of support in society to get us through what is going to come on the other side of this, from young people, children, families, parents, workplaces. I mean, it's hit every part of society, hasn't it? So there'll be issues that we can't even comprehend probably currently that are going to manifest, and we're going to need some assistance with.
Yeah, I mean, Wayne, there's some great organisations that are popping up now addressing exactly what you just talked about. Mm-hmm. So young learners, for example, I can't imagine. You think, oh, great, I don't have to do my GCSEs, but actually, oh, no, I didn't do my GCSEs and I've lost, I've lost the practice. It's like an athlete, isn't it? You're not learning every day you know, for your 10 weeks terms. You lose the skills of learning and sitting down and focusing and concentrating, etc. You don't maybe even classify yourself as a learner anymore because you've been so out of it. I know a lot of kids are doing some hard work at home, but nothing really replaces the idea of you know, tuition, if you like, and direction and an understanding. So getting young people back on board with that and self-directed learning, getting them to have a passion for still going off to further education when you might think, well, what's the point there? Undergraduates who went up in October and thought, oh, you know, I'm being, it's like being back in my bedroom at home again. You know, might as well have stayed there. There's lots to do. There's lots to focus on in terms of well-being. But I'm pleased to say that so far, the third sector's responded really, really well, and there are funding pots out there to start to help. We'll have to see how things progress because it's going to get tougher. I know charities have had a tough time.
And another sort of area, you know, you were saying obviously about people, you know, tendering for jobs. It's, you know, that might be something that, that, you know, small companies might have never even considered before. You know, I mean, you were saying that, you know, that is what you do.
That and the funding,
Again, is you know, bidding for public contracts, is that a difficult thing to be doing? You know, should say small businesses, you know, if they've never done it before, is this the time to do it? Or
it I've got to be careful what I say. It's not the easiest thing in the world to do, but it can be incredibly rewarding, and the climate around bidding for small business is changing because government set itself a target of using small to medium-sized enterprises much, much more in the coming years to provide public services. Mm-hmm. They're looking towards a third of spend by next year, which sounds like an enormous amount, doesn't it, for SMEs, either directly or through the supply chain of other larger contractors.
Right.
But still, there's a push, there's an element within every bid where local government and national government is supposed to encourage SMEs to get into the supply chain. Mm-hmm. There's a green paper out that came out December, I think, that's supposed to be revolutionising how tendering is being done. It's taking away a lot of excessive regulation in there and excessive hurdles that you have to overcome. Mm-hmm. We're not there yet, but I would hope towards the end of the year or maybe into next year, some of those recommendations would have been put into law, and it makes things a bit easier. But mm-hmm. right now, if you want to go looking, then once again, uk.gov, I've launched a new site, a kind of post-Brexit site. We used to have this thing called Contracts Finder, where we used to go for public sector contracts. And that was all tied into EU opportunities, because under the old membership, every opportunity that we publish over a certain volume, a certain amount, which is about 20 grand-ish, had to be advertised in the EU as well because of level playing field. So the new form of Contracts Finder is now called Find a Tender.
Right.
If you put that into your search engine.
Find a tender.
And opportunities, I think over £118,000 mm-hmm. will be on there. I think Contracts Finder will still run in the background until it exhausts all the opportunities there as well. Mm. So it's worth looking at both for opportunities. It's a search engine. So you put in what you're looking for. For example, it's a cleaning contract in the West Midlands.
Yep.
At a certain value, and it will drill down and show you the upcoming tenders that you can go for there.
Right, really useful.
Once again, tendering requires a little bit of a paper exercise, mm-hmm. But no more so than you would do, I think, in your business anyway, where you're looking at the performance of your business plan, your management accounts, for example, if you're a small business, plus exactly what you do and your method statements and how you go about doing things.
Hmm. Fascinating. So there's lots of opportunities still out there, that, you know, particularly if a company's diversifying or they do want to actually engage with the tendering process. I mean, could people contact yourself personally to work with, to help them with that, Richard? Or
always happy to talk to Shropshire businesses about the journey. Small businesses about, is bidding for me, is it not for me? Mm-hmm. Always happy to give them a framework to look at the big time saver and the money saver in bidding is the bid, no bid decision. We can get really excited saying, oh, we do that. We could do that. Let's go and bid for that one.
Yeah.
But actually, when you get down into the detail of the requirement, understanding exactly what the client needs, maybe that one is not for you, or maybe there's a competitor out there that's actually got it pretty much sewn up. Mm-hmm. So therefore that's opportunity is not for you. Mm. But it's good to talk to people to learn exactly what their aspirations are, what the opportunities are, and maybe find different routes in to making a relationship with the client. Mm-hmm. Sometimes bidding's not enough. Just filling in the paperwork's not enough. Sometimes you've actually got to make yourself known, if you like, local government client.
Yeah, is that almost back to the, you know, the pick the phone up or kind of make some kind of contact, you know, like on LinkedIn or you know, another way. As you say, it's again, human to human. If they know you, well, they're more likely to think, oh, yeah, yeah. They've run that company that we need. They could be the ones for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. But again, I know certainly through Contracts Finder and Telford, for example, has its own website with opportunities on there. Mm-hmm. They do advertise for support contracts to help them, certainly in social care, in, for example, cleaning and managing schools and those kind of things.
Yep.
There are contracts out there and they do come up for renewal. There's also this idea of a framework contract as well that you may have come across where government or local government says, well, I'm not sure exactly who we want right now, but if we had a stable of 6 or 8 trusted, proven providers, then every time we do want something over the next 5 or 8 years, we could just put a mini tender out, ask them some very specific questions, very, very quick turnaround bidding process, and then we can go and select the best value bidder there. So you're always in with the shout, if you like, because you're pre-qualified, but the client then picks who they need for the individual project or job they've got within a framework.
I suppose the interesting thing there as well is if you're looking at your company dynamic and whether you want to get involved with competitive tendering, I think some people will probably think, well, you know, how is a decision made? You know, I know that every company is going to put their best information in that they can, but is this really an exercise on final price, or is this an exercise in, you know, what is around the decision-making process? It can't just come down to who is the best priced. Presumably they would go more middle ground, you know, they're not going to go high, I'm going to go low. But then is there any kind of influencing factor there, or is that just what we consider, oh, they're just going to select someone that they know who's putting in a, you know, Bob, who's putting the price of, you know, that he has, because that's what they're looking for.
I think that is a genuine fear. That's a genuine fear, isn't it? If you're starting out in bidding, but thankfully there are public procurement regulations. Decisions are made on the basis, or were made on the basis up until certainly this year, of most economically advantageous tender, which is a nice way of saying best value. So you've got to consider the quality of what you're being offered as well as the price. Mm-hmm. The idea being that you can't just go in and lowball a bid, put a nice base, you know, a price in with no profit, maybe even bid it at a loss just to go and win the contract. So that's a little bit out, because what you'll have is a quality submission and a commercial submission, and there'll be a weighting to the two. Mm. So 60-40 in favour of quality, or even 70-30 we've seen in the past as well. Mm-hmm. So yes, price is obviously very, very important, but it can't all be on price, otherwise the public sector isn't getting the best value for money. And one, actually, I won't go into the details of it, one we just looked at the results of today, the bidder had the best price, a bidder had the best price, but their quality score wasn't sufficient to overcome the higher quality of another bidder. Yeah. So even if you went in at the lowest price, doesn't always mean you're going to win it.
That's really great information, because I think a lot of people, you know, that aren't, you know, seasoned business pros or are not involved with it or don't know any other business that's involved with it will probably consider, well, hang on a minute, is it really worth my time? Because surely they're just after this and that, and maybe they want to do business with the person they know or they've used before, or, you know, how genuine is the level playing field? Is it level? So it's really interesting to know, you know, the scoring on quality, not just on price.
You've got to hit the mark on the quality of your offer, but also, you know, fundamentals, health and safety, environmental performance. And even in a small business, just the little things that you do to show that you're conscious of that. I've got to say before, actually, 10% of all public sector bids will be judged on social value. What's your contribution back? Are you using the Kickstart scheme to hire apprentices? Have you just on a base level, maybe a couple of days each year of your employees to they go and do something for their community? Kind of giving back side of social value as well.
That's really important.
Now 10% of a quality score is quite a chunk. So it's definitely worth getting ducks in a row to say, well, what advantage can we create there? You know, something. We like giving back, don't we? So let's make a virtue of that and make sure we capture all the evidence of what we do in our business, because that will help in our tendering scores. But there's all sorts of factors that need to be considered, and they have to be marked fairly, because there is an appeals process. If you feel that, hang on, this has just gone to the lowest price tender and we had a much better quality submission, there is a degree of openness about, okay, let's have a look at these results and see whether they're absolutely fair. And generally they are fair. They have to be. Because we need to be seen to be spending public money properly.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Richard.
Thank you, Richard. Awesome, mate.
Exactly. So some positivity that there is funding out there, that perhaps it is time to think of changing your business, perhaps completely going in a, you know, new direction. And say the place to go is the government website, but also Funding Central. And other links will be on the Intune website and our Facebook page. Is this correct, Wayne?
Yes, absolutely. So if people go to intune-radio.co.uk, they'll see Richard. We'll have a nice picture of Richard there, a link to his website, and also links to the relevant streams, such as the Kickstart scheme, the New Enterprise Allowance Scheme, and the government site, etc. So people can jump on from there. And of course, they can contact or find Richard direct, you know, RTFQ search. He's Shropshire based, but there'll be a link to his website and our website too.
That's great. Lovely. Thank you so much, Richard. That has been
amazing
great.
Insight. Thank you so much, Richard, for Thank sparing you. The time to come on board. And we'll chat to you again soon.
Cheerio. Great.